Was you ever bit by a dead bee?
Was you?
Yeah. You know, you gotta be careful of dead bees. They can sting you just as bad as live ones. Especially if they was kind of mad when they got killed.
I feel like I was talking to myself.
I bet I've been bit 100 times that way.
Why don't you bite them back?
I would. Only I haven't got a stinger.
Hello and welcome to the Nattercast. This is our Breaking Bad Batcast for episodes 202 and 203 of Breaking Bad, titled Grilled and Bit by a Dead Bee. I'm Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I'm here as always with my lovely wife.
Sione Shankle.
Sione Shankle of Shankle Studios, and we are the Nattercast. Before we get into the show, I'll give you our standard disclaimer and contact information. We are just a couple of super fans of shows like Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy, Justified, Dexter, and we're hoping American Horror Story. We're not affiliated with FX or AMC or anybody on the show. This is just us doing it for our own sake. You can reach us at nattercast@gmail.com. And you can join us on Facebook. We have a lively conversation going on in our Facebook group. Just search for Nattercast. And please, 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 we know you're out there. We've seen the RSS feeds. Please subscribe and rate 5 stars on iTunes. The more you do, the higher we rise. The more people we get listening, the better listener mail that we get. And just a little bit of new business to let you know what our schedule is going to be. We just wrapped up our coverage of the 4th season of Sons of Anarchy, and we're looking to begin casting Justified in January when that starts. And in the meantime, we're going to be catching up with our back project, which is covering all of Breaking Bad before season 4 of Breaking Bad starts, hopefully sometime next
year. But we're also back casting in a unique way Justified before that season starts.
Yes, we will be starting Justified with a back cast, probably not episode by episode, maybe 2 or 3 casts that just round up the first 2 seasons. We are on Justified, we are just into season 2 on our first casual watch through, and then we're going to do our casting watch throughs starting in January. So that's the new business for Nattercast. Anything else to add to that before we get into
No, but it's been a lot of fun, and the Facebook page is starting to really pop with some interesting conversations.
Yeah, it has been fun. And it was nice to like finish out a whole season of a show with Sons of Anarchy, you know, and to really
with the Watchers.
With
they
the Watchers
great.
Of
they
Anarchy
were
totally great and are a blast, and we're gonna work with them again next year as much as we can, you know, we're going to be doing their cast today. They're doing the season roundup.
Right, we'll be there.
Podcast on them. We'll be tuned in for that. But well, okay. Well, let's move on with our work on Breaking Bad. So these two episodes, 202 and 203, are called "Grilled" and "Bit by a Dead Bee," and the story here basically encompasses the whole Tuco, the end of the Tuco arc. Tuco has abducted Pinkman in the brain. He takes him out to the desert, and he's holding him hostage, and he's basically going to try and, you know, work up some kind of crazy meth-addled, you know, salt and sea plan with them. And Jesse and Walter are trying to escape, and that's the story that we'll be covering. And this first episode, Grilled, was written by George Masters, and it was directed by Charles Hayde, who you may remember played Renko on Hill Street Blues. He's sort of the southern, like, redneck cop guy. And he also played, this is sort of a Breaking Bad movie recommendation, he played a character called Delbert Whitey Haynes.
That just sounds nasty.
Delbert's definitely your kind of guy. He's a nasty guy. In a movie called Cop with James Woods, which is basically imagine if James Ellroy wrote Lifetime movies, what they would end up like. This is, I highly recommend Cop for anybody who enjoys a good, like, overblown 80s, almost looks like it's made for TV, highly misogynist police procedural serial killer hunting movie, and he plays the corrupt Hollywood beat cop in that James Woods is pressuring. And there's a great you remember Honey from LA Confidential?
Oh yeah,
the Russian roulette, right? I hold a gun in your mouth, and mm-hmm. This movie has that same gag.
Oh no!
But they do a thing where because James Woods does this to Whitey. He does the Russian roulette routine, but it's actually done a little bit better than it was in Confidential. You see ahead of time that Woods has put dead slugs in his gun. So he takes out his gun, he takes out his revolver. So he loads it up and he fires multiple times. He fires 7 times and nothing happens. Right, so you see that he's put dead slugs in. And then he goes up to Haid and he opens the chamber and shows him the bullets, takes 5 of them out, leaves 1 of them in, closes and spins in place. So the whole time, Woods knows that there's no chance that he's going to blow the guy's head off. But the other guy doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a little more effective than the Russell Crowe bit where he's actually taking that chance. He actually might, unless he happened to
taking
load dead
slugs. Taking the chance for a big cleanup party.
Unless Russell Crowe's plan is to load dead slugs whenever he's doing interviews. In case he has to do this routine. So it was interesting to see that same Elroy routine, you know, played in a couple ways. So Charles Haid, he's our director. And so let's get right into it. So we open up. This is a pattern that Breaking Bad begins to repeat as these seasons go forward, where we open up at the end of the story. We're pulling in this really nice, like you called it.
It was very Peckinpah, like the opening sequence in Wild Bunch.
Yeah, with the close
the
up small, on the
bones. Yeah.
And
big skies,
and the use of depth of field.
Gritty.
Gritty, and we see Pinkman's car bouncing. Like out of control, like it's been abandoned and turned on. And we're just sort of starting, at the end of what has happened, and we're going to roll back and see how we got to this point where Pinkman's car is out in the desert bouncing by itself. And Breaking Bad starts to use that repeatedly. We'll start to see episodes where you see the end of something, and then we're going to roll forward to it, you know, and see how we got there. So we see Pinkman's car bouncing in with all the junk. We go to credits, and then we have Hank is briefing his people on Tuco Salamanca, right, who's the guy who's kidnapped our heroes. And he tells everyone to grow tumescent with anticipation.
Yes. Well, that's because he talks. First, he goes, you know, let's all round
get a big raging heart on.
Get a big raging heart on. And then
he goes to...
And sorry to HR... Human resources, because the two women are looking at each other like, what?
Grow tumescent with anticipation.
Tumescent.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about this. This is where your theory that Hank is on to Walter. You're a strong Hank on to Walter person. I'm a weak Hank on to Walter person. I think you've got the best case in these episodes for your client.
My client, yes.
Your client being the argument in this particular case. Because, you know, ultimately, as we get through these two episodes, Hank is hunting down Walter because Walter has disappeared, right? And his leads lead him. He first goes to Pinkman's mom, and then he finds the car, and then he ultimately finds Tuco at Pinkman's car.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be someone who's saying... You know, you're looking for Walter, and it just so happens that Jesse Pinkman's car was stolen by the guy Tuco Salamanca in the exact same week that Walter is just disappearing and showing back up in fugue states. That someone has to start putting these numbers together.
Well, Hank is usually pretty, you know, quick at putting things together.
Right.
And my theory is because he even talks about it. At the end of, I can't remember if it's the first or second one of these two that we just saw, he talks about, you know, it's like something's, you know, this all matches together. There's something right in front of me and I'm just not getting it.
Right. I just don't see it.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's called denial.
I think that there's a strong case for that.
Mm-hmm.
That he's not willing to look at the one place where the answer is, which is that Walter's involved.
But he keeps saying out loud to... In his dialogues with different people, he keeps talking about, well, you know, and it's this kind of person, it's that kind of person, it's this. And then you'll see him be introduced to that fact by, you know, well, you know, Walter's really super smart. He talks about that and Walter's chemical abilities, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then, you know, later he'll say, the person who did this Heisenberg has to have, and then he almost repeats it.
Right. And it's like not only did they switch over to the P2P cook, which Pinkman didn't know about, but they used, thermite to get it. and he's watching this video, and it's like,
and he knows that that takes brains.
And then I don't think they have the name yet, but soon they're going to get the name Heisenberg, right? And if you do kind of anybody who does a Wikipedia search on Heisenberg is going to find out he is a famous chemist physicist, right? Even a high school chemistry teacher who wasn't super overqualified would be familiar.
And the fact that he figures out the second cell phone.
Second cell phone, and there's also these missing...
Which he knows is, you know, either an affair or drugs.
Or drugs, right? Yeah, and the affair is less likely with cancer and chemo and all that other stuff. And then there's also the fact that there's this missing equipment in the high school that you know you pinned the wrong guy for the missing equipment. So I think he might actually at this point have explicitly have the idea that Walter was selling stolen equipment to Pinkman in exchange for marijuana. I think that Hank will actually might have that in his conscious mind. But I don't think that he's at the point where he's like, Walter is the blue meth cooker. You know, because he's spending too much time bird-dogging the blue meth cooker, you know, but it feels unreasonable that he's not coming to that conclusion, you know, on a fairly soon basis. You know, so I think, that's where I am on that. Do you have anything else on Hank? And?
No, because I'm trying to, like, compartmentalize, since you and I are caught up in the seasons, I'm trying to, you know, like, I've forgotten that Heisenberg name hadn't.
Yeah.
I'm like, why that had come up?
It has come up for the criminals.
Yeah.
So like Tuco's like, I thought your name was Heisenberg.
Right, right.
Hartwell White, you know. Hartwell. So that's a good trivia question out there. Walter's middle name is Hartwell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting that a guy whose name is Hartwell has bad lungs. You know, but there you are. So Heisenberg, the name has not drifted out to the cops yet. It's just among the what do you call it, the cartel guys. So we're out, you know, pulling back to the story. So we're out, and we have Jesse and Walter with Tuco, and we introduce Tio Hector, Uncle Hector, you know. So for those of you paying attention at home, keep an eye on this character because he definitely comes back in a very interesting way, you know, as the seasons progress. But right now we have a guy and he's clearly stroked out, and Walter and Jesse think that he's zoned out. They think that he's not lucid and not following them. So like they start openly planning to poison Tuco in front of Hector when Tuco's back is turned. And then Hector, of course, blows the deal every time the guy's going to go near the poison. He's like ringing the bell and smashing food around and, you know, acting like an old crazy guy. And he definitely put me in mind, I don't know how you feel about it, but he put me in mind of our cat. You want to tell people about the Santa Maria?
All right. I think we might have spoken about this a little bit in some other casts, but...
We have.
Snake Plissken the cat. He has an attitude problem, and he will pull a... now we have a name for it, honey. A Tico.
A Tio.
Tio, I'm sorry. Tio. A Tio.
Yes.
He's going to pull a Tio.
It's a Hector.
It's a Hector.
Yeah, Tio means uncle. Right? So it's a right. Tio Hector.
It's a Tio Hector.
It's a Tio Hector maneuver. The Tio Hector maneuver.
I mean, I was up in the middle of the night a couple nights ago, and he was like threatening to do it.
Tio Hectoring.
I'll ask, you know, support on this, and people are like, oh, he's stressed out. And it'll be like, you mean because the dog got food 5 minutes before he did kind of stressed out? Or I'm not going to lay down and take a nap with him no matter how much he yells and points at the bed?
I was going to get him one of those little bells for Christmas.
Oh, God.
Ding, 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 ding.
I have some of those in the basement.
Yeah, you got one. I'm going to hook him up.
Oh, man. Do not give him any more opportunities to communicate with us.
Ding, ding, ding. So my thing on watching that is that, okay, we find out a little bit more about Hector later on, but he's basically an old school cartel guy. We learned that in this episode.
I love the way he just hates everyone.
He hates everyone. He's just filled with hatred. But he was an enforcer, but you would think he would have had a little money saved him up to get himself one of those Stephen Hawking chairs where you can actually do the words. Not just have the bell. You know, he's too old school for an iPhone. We can't hook him up to a little pad.
He's a Luddite.
Ding, 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 ding.
He's not even going for an electronic bell.
Yeah.
You know?
He's
a Luddite.
He's a Luddite.
You like that one?
I really enjoyed in this first episode where we're with Tuco and the guys, the tension that was built.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're with this mad, crazy dog. He's like saying, oh, we're going to go to Mexico. We'll cook 24/7. Don't worry about your family. I'll get you a new one. I'll get you a new one. You know, and he's just got
this. And I just love this. I need to get really, really high. And I'm like, that's exactly not what you need to be doing. But seriously. We get it that that's part of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, I think of sometimes the one of the few, very few flaws of this show is that I think that Pinkman is sometimes a bit of a one note. The sense of crazy urgency and not thinking things through at all. There's just nothing meta about his thinking. He's especially. Just like, It's like, calm down a second so that we can appreciate it when you go up, you know?
Yeah. I think he's but, improved.
Yeah. As the season's however, yeah. however, and I think that's definitely a directing choice too.
Yeah.
Taco, as Pinkman calls
him. I don't know anybody named Taco, bitch.
He's even worse. And so that scene is just like, in the farmhouse, it's just like, ha 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 ha. You know, you're just reliving, if anyone out there has ever done any crystal methamphetamine, you relive the worst of it.
The crazy.
In that it's just like the hairs are on the back of your neck.
You know what it reminded me of? I know you've seen this. It's been a while since I saw it, but Vincent D'Onofrio in Salt and Sea.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, too.
He's got the missing nose.
I have it.
He's redoing the Kennedy assassination.
My God. Yeah. That was so hysterical when they make the little car and they put in the little dolls.
He's got the BB guns.
No, it wasn't dolls. It was the pigeons.
He's got pigeons.
They dressed up pigeons or something.
He dressed up pigeons or cats or something. Yeah, he's got them in the car. But it was the same kind of environment. It was out in the desert, you know, and it was the same kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of, except for he was much more highly constructed in narrative and too. It was a little more limbic. But both guys were like just unreasoning. And you're right, you know, when you've sort of known tweakers and they get to this point where you can't really reason.
You know.
And that is something that Jesse brought up.
They're on their own like path in their head.
Yeah.
And you're either going to, if you don't know if you're going to disturb it or help it. So anything you can say goes into one of those two categories because everything's black and white.
Right.
And you might say, hey, why don't I get you a glass of something? And all of a sudden, it's taken personally in this really horrible other way.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
And you're being beaten down.
Or, hey, let's do this. And they think it's the greatest idea ever.
Right.
You know, it's pretty harsh to be around.
Well, especially if you're Tuco, who apparently just can do massive quantities of this stuff. I mean, this is supposed
to be... And still retain some muscle structure and some skin tone.
And well, this stuff that he's doing is supposed to be several times purer than what you would normally have. And he's crushing it up by, forget, you know, grams, he's crushing this up by the ounce. He's got, like, shot glasses full
of meth. I know, and he just uses the butt of his knife. There's no refinement at all.
Yeah, it's just like a brick and poke or something. You can just go through it in an evening. And
but he does have his limits, Jason.
Yeah.
Chili powder.
He doesn't like chili powder.
No.
And so that's another... device, you know, we talk about Chekhov's gun and things like that. This is the ricin, right? They had the chili powder meth had the ricin in it. And we're going to see a couple times the lads like setting up to ricin somebody.
The ricining.
The ricining. Ricin beans?
Oh, bitch.
Bitch. Yeah, so, you know, but he doesn't, I mean, we almost ricin him, but then he doesn't like chili powder, so he goes back to the other blue stuff, and okay, you know, you blew your shot. And then they try to put it in the burrito, you know, and you were funny, he was like, you know, he's over there, he's grilling, so I guess, you know, one of the episode's name is Grilled, so one title references that Tuco grills them up their lunch, and you're like, you know, who wants to eat when they're cooking?
Who wants not eat or cook, and who wants to have anything from him?
Well, there's that too. But I think he's
making a burrito type thing.
Yeah, well, it's like a quesadilla burrito, and he's like
piling meat on, and
he looks like he's a good cook though. You know,
really,
given the environment, he's got the onions and the grilled meat, and he's really focused. He's got the big flame. Focused. Yeah. The other thing with the tension of this is the whole like you know that Walter and Jesse proceed at the beginning of the episode. You know, planning things in front of Hector, and then Hector's able to communicate to Tuco in this really limited way, and so the tension of Tuco getting this information from Hector, it's like, you don't trust them? They're trying to pull something, you know? And, you know, I was in there, like, at the very end, before it gets to the gunfight, saying, just rush him. You gotta just rush him down.
Yeah.
The only chance you have is when he's crouched in front of you, and is that you flying tackle him both at the same time.
Well, they are a little dehydrated.
I know. It makes perfect sense to say wouldn't. I'm not saying it's unrealistic. Yes. I'm saying it's like, this is your moment. It doesn't get better from here. There's not better Tuco stuff coming.
Better Tuco stuff.
Than him crouching in front of you while you're sitting on the couch at a point where you could just pop him in the face and take his gun. Yeah, so, and I, you know, yeah, I agree a little bit about, especially about Jesse Pinkman, you know, Aaron Paul's, you know, character being a little one-note, especially in the early seasons. But I was actually very affected by the fight scene where Tuco, like, throws him out the door, slams him against the wall. I was feeling like the way that was blocked.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
I was persuaded that this guy is really in danger. He's really mad dogging on Pinkman. And it's not, and you can see
him. Well, he catches a little air too, and they're on the ground, and he's picking him up and slamming him back down. And the way they're wrestling, it was really good, unique fighting.
It was persuasive.
Yeah, you know, it was that, really good job.
Yeah, that he was just dominating this kid. And then Walter...
They have a good fight instructor on there. We should have caught the name.
And when he says, you know, I don't want to die, you know, and he's looking, he pops up into the camera.
Yeah, that was interesting how he really said that so plaintively. And it's like, that's a theme. Like, because sometimes you think Pinkman is the ultimate in, like, passive aggressively trying to be killed.
Possibly.
And now he's, like, screaming for his life. It's really an issue for him.
He's a self-destructive character, but he wants to live.
But he'll do stuff that's like throws caution completely to the wind, that anything could happen.
Well,
to
you know what was interesting is that later on in the second episode, Walter's talking to him on the phone and he says, well, you know, we need to cook. And Pinkman's like, are you serious? And he says, what's changed?
Right.
And the fact that Walter doesn't see that everything has changed as a result of what just happened here.
No, I think every time Walter gets away with something, bravado, and he thinks he can do more.
Yeah, and with Jesse, it's like, what's changed is my life was threatened. What's changed is I had to get myself arrested by the DEA.
And you and I had to come up with this amazing concoction of a story.
This ridiculous story that's not going to hold together, and I have to, like, that's what's changed, you know. But on the other hand, Pinkman's got no money now. You know, the DEA takes his money. So he does have to cook. He's like, what else is he going to do? He's got bills to pay and everything.
The Pinkman bills. What do you think those would be?
Well, he's got rent, you know, and stuff like that.
He
has, you know.
Well, that he inherited the house.
Yeah, but he's...
But I mean, I'm sure there's like he's got taxes and food.
He says, I have bills.
But it just seems like that would be something really funny, like a special Pinkman bill.
It's being Pinkman's accountant.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's funny.
Because you know he's buying a lot of mayonnaise.
Right.
He's like us. He has like one thing in the refrigerator he has too much of. Like too much ketchup, too much mayonnaise.
Yeah, I always keep buying too much
And we keep thinking, oh, I need more mayonnaise. And it's like, we're not using it.
back at the beginning of the episode, though, the other angle we have on this is the investigation. You know, so it's Hank and his partner and, I forget the name of the guy they bring in to help look do the missing person stuff. And Marie and Skyler and Walter Jr. out passing out these flyers. And, you know, I've seen this now a couple times, you know, recently, and I'm just, you know, I see this as the moment when, again, answering Walter's question, what has changed, is that now it is impossible for Walter to continue in this business without it infecting his family. Without impacting his family life. I mean, he's disappearing for days. He has to come up with these fugue state things. They're out putting up these flyers, their second cell phones. The compartmentalization that he wanted to have is now completely gone. And he doesn't see that the Heisenberg business is going to spill out completely on his family, you know, to the point where he's got a gun and buckets of money next to the computer. Walter Jr. is just kind of kicking it. So he's printing out these things. Nobody look. I mean, the baby isn't even born yet. And there's an open box of diapers,
right?
You know, that has this weapon and this cash. There's just, he doesn't see how fused his life has become, and inseparable. So let's see what else I got there on that.
But the money was dry and tidy.
It was dry and tidy. That's for sure.
I like that. Dry and tidy.
And the other thing that makes me think, you know, that, you know, that there really needs to be more love for your Hank theory is that Skyler is getting onto Walt. You know, she's not buying these explanations. You know, she doesn't buy the phony cell phone story. She knows something here is up. And she's not quite sure what it is yet, right? But we're going to see that that doesn't last for long, that she begins to really hone in. I mean, this is somebody who caught it that he spent $15 on the wrong credit card to buy some office supplies, right? So she's not going to be turning a blind eye to a lot of the stuff that's going on, and he greatly underestimates her perception on his life, I think. Yeah.
Well, you know, he just, I mean, we're only in a few episodes here now on this backcasting, but like I said earlier, he just gets more and more almost narcissistic. It's just, he's very like, oh, that worked, what can I do next, without thinking about anybody around him.
Right.
And it just gets more and more narrow.
Yeah. And his options get more and more narrow. And we've also been introduced to the women.
But he takes bigger and bigger risks.
Right. He's saying nothing's
changed. I mean, he looks like he had a good time at the end of this episode. Well, that was fun, a little hospital game.
Yeah, he puts on, at the end of the second episode, he puts on his little hat and he does his little naked dance for her. It's like, I'm going to 7-Eleven.
I know, that was funny, but it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, but it just really kind of looks like he goes, oh, I got away with it. So keep going.
And think about the layers of lies that are going on. So he's lied to his family and said that there's this fugue state, and gives him this bullshit excuse for why he can't account for all this stuff.
And speaking of which,
yeah,
that was just, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who wrote this in, but that psychiatry answer was completely wrong.
I was about to get to the psychiatrist.
Yeah, go for it.
So he's talking to the psychiatrist, and I think we'll start with you. Why don't you describe what's wrong with it?
Okay.
So let's get to the psychiatrist.
So he asks, because what he sees that if he continues with his story, he's going to be spending months in psychiatric care. He's like, whoa, I got to change my story.
I got to change my story.
So he asks, you know, what the, to see where, what he can do.
The confidentiality.
Right. And that is not how the confidentiality works. It's not, I only have to tell that person.
Yeah. He says, I can't tell anybody.
Because and then you made that great joke. Hey, my name is Dr. So-and-so, and I just want you to know that one of my patients wants to kill you. Really? They're going to have that conversation?
Thanks for the heads up. Yeah. But you can't tell anybody.
But I have to tell you.
I have to tell you.
And I want you to sign this document that I told you to prove that I follow the law. That is not the
That's
law.
That's not how it works.
The law is that you're going to be a harm to yourself or to others.
Right.
Major ongoing crimes, things like this.
Right.
But particularly harmed and or any child abuse or molestation that... All of that has to be reported to the authorities.
Right. And if you're in danger, you have to be committed.
Yes.
You know, you can't. It's just, I won't warn somebody if you're going to try and kill. Never even harm. If you're going to harm somebody, I don't have to say anything. Just, you know, but kill.
Yeah, only kill.
Hey,
only I have to go tell the potential victim.
Who can't do anything with the information? Because right. I can't tell them who you are.
They just hide for a while.
Just hide for a while.
Hey, I got this guy who's really good at hiding. Let me hook you up.
Yeah. Better call Saul.
Oh, that you gave it away something.
I haven't given it away. No. It's kind of, there's a thing coming.
There's a thing coming.
With a guy named Saul.
That's irresistible.
That's irresistible. So the angle I wanted to talk about on the psychiatry thing is what you just brought up is he's in the psychiatrist's office and he's like, this is the beginning of a process, Walter. You better have a snack and a drink because we're going to be here for a long time.
And that is so not what Walter wants to hear.
Well, and also the psychiatrist is just fishing. Do you feel guilty? Do you feel scared?
Right.
Are you having night terrors? Do you feel this? It's like he's filling in a form.
Uh-huh.
Right? Rather than saying, why don't you, which is a terrible technique.
It's just but saying, it's a common one.
Why don't you tell me what you're feeling? Is a psychiatrist not supposed to be suggesting feelings to you? I say, why don't you tell me what you're feeling? You know, that kind of thing. But maybe he's not a psychotherapist. He's just a drug pill pusher. Well, normally or something. And apparently not a lawyer.
He's a psychiatrist, and they don't have as much time in actual therapy.
That's true.
They're trying to fill out diagnostic stuff for medicine.
But this is TV. They don't make the distinction between psychiatrists and psychotherapists as clearly on TV as they could. It's like the birth control pills in Walking Dead. Everyone was like all freaked out because she took abortion pills that were really morning after pills. And everyone's like, no, it's the wrong pills. She would know that and everything. It's like it's zombie apocalypse. Give it a break. Okay, she's just tried to take some pills. But anyway, back to our show here. The thing I wanted to get to is like, so Walter's in there and he's seeing that his bullshit story is going to commit him to untold hours with this psychiatrist, so he changes to another bullshit story, right? He says, you can't tell me, you can't report anything, right? So instead of telling you I was kidnapped by people who I don't want to tell my family about, right, and that's what happened to me, and I got away, and that person's no longer alive, and I didn't kill them, and there we are. Instead of doing that, he comes up with this, I had to get away, I was just feeling pressured, I was, you know, I've got all these things on my mind, and I just wanted to escape, and it was I just walked away and wanted to come back. You know, he tells the psychiatrist that story. So it's like now there's all these layers of deception going on for Walter. He's not capable, you know, of just being honest with someone who's pretty much, according to the mythology of this show, legally bound not to reveal what he says. Even with that much safety, he can't be forthcoming about himself. Which makes perfect sense. You wouldn't want to admit to somebody that you're a methamphetamine
dealer
or whatever, you know. So it's not illogical. It's just like it's a theme of this show, is that Walter keeps trying to control these perceptions.
Yeah.
And I thought there was an interesting parallel to that and Hank's pep talk.
I love that pep talk.
Well, he gives this great pep talk, and it's like, evidently he wants the DEA not only to arrest Tuco Salamanca, but also apparently to beat USC in the Rose Bowl. You know, it's like this complete football coach thing.
There's a great aside that's happening in the middle of it, too, where he's talking about... I had written it down. How like someone has just completely arrogant and smug, you know, because of the way that they're running a tight ship,
right.
And that just makes them arrogant and smug. And then right after he says that, he high fives people and leaves. And it's all about perceptions, man. And
he's like, yes,
I got to keep them going. And I'm like, who's arrogant and smug and trying to run a tight ship?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just more of this Breaking Bad. He's like, he steps out and he tells Gomi, oh, this guy's in Mexico, we're never going to find him, but I got to keep the team jazzed.
Right.
I got to keep the team jazzed by wasting their time. These are professionals, you know.
Right.
How jazzed do you need to be to find a criminal who's shooting up the city? You know, that's kind of your job, right? So I just thought that there was an interesting, like, Hank-Walt parallel there, where Hank is, you know, saying it's about perceptions. And we also know, going into this, he's going to start manifesting some PTSD around the shooting. And we've seen just the beginnings of that occurring here, but he's maintaining his bravado. He's maintaining his
well, he's indestructible.
Right. As Marie says, you know, Hank is indestructible, but he's not indestructible.
Right.
You know, he's going to break a little bit himself. Let's see. So what else do we have here? Okay. We were going to poison you. Yeah. So,
and Heisenberg is a business name.
It's a business name. So,
yes. Also, and then there's the whole thing of Walter has a secret, you know?
Right.
Duh. That's like the show.
That's the show. Walter has a secret. You might as well call it.
Walter has a secret. Yeah.
So Hank knows that Walter has a secret, you know? And
he's never going to let that go.
He's never going to let that go, but he's like he's swimming around this bowl, you know? And the other thing that makes me kind of think that there's a realistic element to Hank's not quite nailing it is that we have to remember that the time on this show is very compressed. They've done 4 seasons, and in the 4th season we find out that it's only been less than a year over the course of the entire show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means this period that we're going into, where Hank really needs to have gotten to Heisenberg, you know, his identity or whatever, it's only a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's months and months and months.
Mm-hmm.
So he could be hot on the guy's trail and still take seasons to get there, because it's a season's not that long, it's only a few weeks. Yeah. And the shootout, what'd you think of the shootout with Tuco? That was so...
it was beautiful.
Yeah. Talk about grilled again. Hank's car gets...
yeah. You know, all that deck gets shot out. Whole grill gets shot out.
Makes me wonder how he got
It did see...
right? His radiator was certainly gone.
Yeah, you know. Or maybe he called for backup. Probably called.
He probably called for a pickup
because he had to.
It was a crime scene. He could have
exactly.
Made it anyway. Yeah.
Exactly.
And
that would be interesting. It's like, where's the follow up on that crime scene cleanup? You know,
you're gonna find Pinkman's fingerprints.
Well, not just that. There's just a lot of interesting stuff that's gonna be there because so much action.
Like Pinkman and Walter's phones.
But they're like torn apart and thrown. But still,
they have the ID chips on them. You can still find out
who they are.
You know.
And they drop the ball there.
That doesn't
make sense either, because you'd think they'd be like, oh, wow, this is like a big layer. Let's really
They were
this.
Thrown out into the weeds, so they would have to do a grid search to find it. But it would be, for a shoot like that, it would be standard procedure to come out.
You want to know who all had been there and what's happening.
You do a grid search, you do dog sniffing.
Well, not just that, it's like, this is his lair. Let's, you know, and they obviously got the uncle, they got Tio.
And they would also find the gun that they buried, because it wasn't buried that deep, metal detector would find it. Mm-hmm. It's obviously disturbed earth and mm-hmm. all that. So they kind of, on the show, they actually do kind of drop the ball on the post-Tuco reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was actually a practical question, because the actor who plays Tuco went on to The Closer. That became his...
He was already in The Closer, I think. He was doing both.
He was doing both, but he had to commit to that role. He couldn't be in Albuquerque.
Right.
And so
he's like totally different in Closer.
Totally different in Closer. Yeah. But they had planned to make him the big bad for this season of the show, and I think he just had to commit to The Closer, and so they ended up killing him off. And I think the kill-off is a little sloppy. It's like they didn't quite follow up on all the things you would get from...
The fallout.
From the fallout of killing Tuco. Oh, yeah. But, it's a forgivable element of the show, I think. Tuco shoots a cow. I got here in my notes.
Oh, it's all gone.
This also has nothing left, man.
What the?
First of all, why is there
that
a cow?
That
was very salt and sea. Why is there a cow out here to begin with?
One that looks so healthy, too.
The unluckiest cow.
Did you love that line, chemotherapy and marijuana go together like apple pie and Chevrolet? That was a good one.
I think they should start using that out here at the medical marijuana places. Come in for your apple pie with your Chevrolet. That's great. And that's a little bit even more of a thing where, so you have Skylar and Marie, they're being a little more super cop even than Hank here. They're like, what about the pot dealer? What mm-hmm. about the this? What about the that? And so like Hank didn't...
That's why when you see Hank kind of pause... I think that's part of his going, I think I know, but I don't want to put a name to it.
Could be. I also, the other read that I got there was, Walter's evidently having an affair. I don't want to be here in front of my wife and his wife.
Right.
Using my super cop powers to come to that conclusion. But they keep feeding him that. Mm-hmm. She's like, what, is Walter having an affair? And then Marie dismisses that idea and goes to the drugs thing. And he says, even talking to Pinkman is a stretch. And you'd think that Hank would start putting together, I wouldn't have even talked to Pinkman if Marie hadn't suggested it was that there was a connection there. And that led me to Tuco, who I thought was gone, for good. It just seems I'm just starting to sense here, it's like it's a little bit too much for him to be not catching it. Yeah. I mean,
and did you notice that the opening, there was a nice touch, the Muzak that was playing in the opening when they find him in the fugue state.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like making love. It was just like, what?
On music.
And they play it like, half the song while they're, discovering his clothes and stuff. And I thought, that's an interesting choice.
That's an interesting choice. Yeah, that was the second episode. It was directed by Terry McDonough.
And it's like following someone's trail close to the bedroom or rose petals.
He's got
or something.
His, and you get the Walter.
And
instead,
it's Walter like all fugued out, supposedly. And it's like, come get me.
Come get me. The alibi here is Walter is in a fugue state, and Jesse like cooks up this windy, windy party.
Right.
3-day party.
Marie's just glad that it didn't happen at Whole Foods where she shops.
Where she shops, right. And then, forgot about Badger's cousin. Yeah.
Oh, Badger.
Well, first, good old Badger. He's like humping the Wonka factory. I'm going to fuck the methylamine. Uh-huh. I'm going to have sex with this chemical. It's very caustic.
Okay, dude. Okay, dude. We got your priorities.
And he's like, and then Jesse, there's a very interesting line reading where he's like, do not mess with me. Get it. It's like his language center is misfiring.
Well, it's weird because he's going, let's do this now, let's do that now, without thinking of the big picture.
Right.
He's acting just like Pinkman. It's that frustrating thing that they do that you're sitting there going, okay, at some point, you guys, this doesn't work.
Pinkman does surround himself with other Pinkmans.
Yeah.
And
he's the king of the Pinkmans.
He is the master Pinkman.
It's a phenomenon. Pinkman is a phenomenon.
Well, you know what they say, the land of the blind, right, the one-eyed man is king. So Pinkman is definitely at the top of his peer group. He's at the upper end of the bell curve of the Jesse Pinkman empire.
And Walter never gives him a break.
Just the one time, you brought me my toys. Good boy,
He's just brutal. And he like takes the first thing of water when they get water.
Oh, talk about not cutting him a break. The next episode, I don't want to spoil it too much, but you're going to see some Walter not cutting Jesse a break. Next
episode
is definitely...
He's just so abusive to him, and it's relentless.
Jesse takes a lot of abuse coming up in the next few episodes because he has no money, right?
Right.
And Walter is not very... You would think if Walter would say, you know, I'll help you out here. How about you just pay me back the next time we make cash? Right? I don't need this money today. Here's a bunch of money to cover the fact that you got, you know, your stuff taken. And you can just pay me back as we go. We're clearly doing this thing. But no, he's not. He's a little bitch about it, you know. And we'll see that coming. So we have the RV has been taken by Badger's cousin, who's very suspicious.
It's in a safe place.
It's in a safe place. It's in an impound yard.
That is so ominous sounding. It's in a safe place.
It's in a safe
place. In other words, it hasn't been destroyed. It's someplace where it's being preserved as evidence. Mm-hmm. We're setting it up for vulnerability.
Don't worry, now there's a paper trail. Everything's fine. You know, and the Windy Windy alibi doesn't really hold up because it's very public, you know.
I wonder if they're going to put, like, this really good bouncing. Like, when the first open up in this first episode tonight, you know, we see Jesse's car. First you hear it sounds like it's an oil rig.
Right.
But a metronome.
Right.
Like it's setting a tone, a beat, yeah. And I'm just wondering if they could do that to the band. The RV.
The RV have it bouncing. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Yeah, because they're always trying to start the thing.
Good use of cars as characters.
Well, then, so Jesse's setting up this alibi. He needs an alibi for the last couple of days, right? And he has Badger phone in an anonymous tip and gets himself arrested at the Crystal Palace. And, you know, it's not, I mean, obviously, first of all, relying on Wendy, although she does come through for him, you know, is dubious to begin with. You know, it's again, one of these things where Walter's in this denial about how much has changed. It's like, Jesse's like, I had to walk into the lion's den here to cover myself. I had to go right up to your brother-in-law and lie to his face about where I was and what I was doing with no witnesses around. And the bust, when they come to bust him, it put me in mind of Usual Suspects when they arrest, at the beginning, when they arrest, what's his name, the mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And they send, and he's there and he's working on a car and they send in like 8 detectives and mm-hmm. 3 or 4 patrol guys. He's like, you sure you brought enough guys?
Well, they're over. It's like that's the way American police work now. It's like they're paramilitary units. That's not, that is actually not unrealistic. I mean, we've seen just on our street when someone gets pulled over.
There's like four units.
To make a, you know, turn signal or something. And it's just like, what?
What did we see the other night? We saw a fire engine, a detective's car, 2 units, and 4 uniformed cops, and, you know, all
and one running from another car from down the street towards the supposed scene.
Right. And I think they were like, rousting somebody.
Come on, guys.
You know? So when they get Pinkman, there's like the DEA SWAT team comes in. And it was like, I didn't count, but it looked like 6 or 7 guys. And it's like, you need this much to take down Pinkman? You're all body armored up and everything. He's not going to come along quietly. You know, you're expecting a shootout in the meth palace. So there's that. Let's see what else I got here. Okay, so bit by a dead bee. That's an interesting bit. That line, I'm not sure what the... So, like, Grilled, I get the title references on Grilled. We have Tuco's grill. We have him, Tuco, grilling up lunch. We have the grills of the cars get shot up. Bit by a dead bee, I'm not sure what the title reference there is and who the dead bee is. The line comes from To Have and Have Not. It's a bit of dialogue from between Lauren Bacall and Walter Brennan. About, and she says, have you ever been bit by a dead bee? You know, I've been bit plenty of times. And I'm not sure. It's one of those weird things that Lauren Bacall sometimes says in those old movies. We have no idea what the fuck she's talking about.
Well, I mean, it is a bit of a myth. Like, because I was a kid and I have bee allergies. And there is this idea that you can't touch a dead one. They can sting you too.
Right.
And it's not that they can actively sting you. But we've got some people that are dead now.
The Tuco, certainly, yeah.
And what I feel kind of like it might be maybe some foreshadowing.
Yeah, maybe he's the dead bee.
And at the very end, he jams that butterfly IV into his hand,
straight into his muscle.
Yeah, it was like that's not how you would do that. Speaking of bad procedures. Why would you do that? But it looks like a bee.
Yeah, that does look like a bee sting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something to that
because of the little flags on it, little wings on it for safety.
Now this episode. Dead Bee and Grilled, they both kind of open up. Grilled opens up with the car, but then when we come back from credits, with the camera pointing up to the sky, right? And in Grilled, it's when the trunk opens and we get a whiteout, mm-hmm. right? Which we're going to see that a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And we see Skyler, and she says, "I understand everything." There's like Walter's hallucinating Skyler, saying, you know, that she's foreshadowing her, like, comprehending and understanding his choices. And then in Dead Bee, we open up, I think, the first shot with, and this is one that they really love to do, where you're looking up through like a glass partition and they're clearing dirt away, so it's like from the point of view of being unburied, and then you see Jesse and Walter digging and they're going to bury the gun, you know. So that's another kind of trope that we're going to start seeing a little bit more in Breaking Bad, is this camera pointing straight up into a whiteout or mm-hmm. through dirt that's going to be cleared away. You know, and it's just, this is, I think, the point on the show where the cinematography, it's always been good, but this is where it really starts to become exceptional.
Yes.
You know, it's like, before there'd be a couple of good shots, ooh, look at that, you know, that junkyard or whatever, but now, from here on out, it's like consistently just a beautifully shot show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slovis, right?
Slovis, yeah. Slovis. Yeah, Michael Slovis, director of photography. That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, and it's not just these nice vistas and, you know, interesting pans and tilts that are going on out in the environment, so to speak. Like, when we feel all that tension in that fight, I mean, yeah. that shooting is really tricky.
Yeah.
And builds, like, this incredible emotional tenor.
And the use of time-lapse.
Yep.
And then there's the use of the fixed camera on the inside of a vehicle, like when Walter's on the bus, the empty bus, and we have this cam, mm-hmm. and it's almost like a monkey cam, but it's too far away.
There was one shot I was particularly in love with where Walter turns into the camera, just the head, like, he's laying back and he just turns into it, and it's so ominous.
Or like the bit, and, you know, we said it's not realistic, but it looks great, where he's hiding, he does his little Walter cat burglar routine coming into the house. He realizes he's left a box of money and weapons in the nursery, and that Skyler will eventually discover it, or Walter Jr., so he breaks out of the hospital and kind of Batman's his way into the house. So, you know, and we're going to see a lot of Walter sneaking around
the house. Yeah, Batman, Walter.
You know, and then Skyler and Walter Jr. get up and they're going to make a sandwich, and he's hiding in the corner behind the door, and the half where there's supposed to be a little slit where there'd be a little light on him, it looks like there's a fucking Klieg light.
Well, it's just like this like huge key light.
Yeah, but it looks great.
It looks gorgeous, fantastic. But when you think about it as a filmmaker, you're like, all right, that's a lot more light to make that work than was natural, but it still looked fantastic.
Yeah, it looked really
good. And that's what's important.
Yeah,
visual storytelling.
So we start seeing, there was definitely a motif throughout these episodes of Walter being half in shadow and half in light. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when mm-hmm. he lies to Skyler about his cell phone and he tries to kiss her, she turns away.
And he's in the shadow at the end.
He's in the shadows, even though his light is on.
Yes.
Right, so he wouldn't be in shadow because his light is on.
Right.
And hers is off. But we still see her in light.
Incredible choices.
It's really interesting that even when his light is on and hers is off, she's in the light, he's in the shadow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that had to be on purpose.
That was gorgeous.
Right, that's totally great. You know, so from here on out, the show really does this kind of stuff very, very well. It's just, I think this was the point where I started to notice, it's like, damn, they're really shooting this show. You know, it's not just a couple. Usually every show has a couple of really nice shots that they put a lot of effort into.
This is really thought out.
This is really thought out.
And it's not about let's just get coverage. It's how can we make this scene say this emotion?
Right.
With light, with camera angles, not just with acting or just words. It's just incredible. Incredible.
Okay. So then let's see. So we have the RV with Badger's cousin. That's perfectly safe. That's just great.
There's some nice foreshadowing there.
We're stuck in the hospital. We have Jesse loses his $68,000, which is a lot.
What we always want to see is extremely desperate Jesse.
Desperate Jesse is not a good thing.
Well, I mean, because he's desperate by his baseline is desperation.
He's a cartoon duck, as it is. You know, and so things don't go well. I would recommend from Jesse, he makes one mistake consistently throughout the show that he sometimes gets bit by and sometimes not, which is that he keeps all of his money in a duffel bag in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were Jesse.
And he doesn't try to hide it, and people see him go into it sometimes.
I would put $20,000 or $30,000 in a safe deposit box. Yeah. And make that your rainy day fund, because you shouldn't be carrying your rainy day fund around with your gym socks. when everybody you know is a tweaker or a criminal or something.
And like he's that. Very cavalier about it.
He's very cavalier, and you know, and Walter's very planned and structured, and he ends up screwing up a lot too, you know. But still, Jesse, a couple of thousand at least somewhere that you know it's safe and you can get to at any time. And when he says, "I need a root beer. I got medical issues."
And a tinkle.
And a root beer, well, he says tinkle. I can get you a root beer and a tinkle.
Yeah, a root beer and tinkle. I have medical issues.
I have really, low blood sugar.
That's what it is, medical issues.
Because I got medical issues. Her medical issues are low blood sugar.
And it was great. Her name's Wendy. And we have this Wendy character on Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy, yeah, yeah.
Who's pretty skanky.
Also a tweaker and skanky. Yes. But she's looking more healthy now.
Right now, yes. Yeah, but yeah. It's just like... Whoa! What is it with men and the word Wendy? Is that what that means? Does that mean
everyone knows it's Wendy? it just goes to your head.
Is that like a major skank name for you guys?
Wendy, skank name? I don't know, man. Not until now.
Because I think of the names, the boozy names like Brandy, Chablis. Those are skanky names.
Yeah, those are kind of skanky, but then there's kind of like high end skanky, like Mercedes
and Porsche. But those are like, those used to be nice names.
Yeah, Toyota, Ford.
No, Mercedes was actually named Mercedes after a real woman.
No, I know. Yeah, named after the car. That was that fish called Wanda. It's like. When he found out her daughter's name is Portia, he said, "Why did they name her after a car?"
Right.
Don't call me stupid. I don't know. No, there's no pre-existing as far condition on the name Wendy that I'm aware of prior to Sons of Anarchy and Breaking Bad. But they both did at the same time introduce methed out Wendy's.
Yes.
Right. Because both seasons.
I'm wondering if there's a Wendy in LA that's working the FX channel circuit.
Yeah, either that or these are all McDonald's people. They really don't.
Or there's some connection there. I don't know, but I'm finding that intriguing.
Yeah. So Wendy, as it turns out, plays the prisoner's dilemma pretty well, and she sticks to her story. You know, she doesn't roll over on this ridiculous plan. Have to wonder what was Pinkman's pitch to Wendy? I need you to get arrested and tell this fairly thin story and hold it together in front of the DEA because I will give you what? I've got no money.
Well,
I mean, she likes him. They kind of like know each other.
Right.
You know,
he gets her super, super high.
A lot of drugs. Okay, yes. All right.
Yeah. He says, that's your last one. Hurry up and do it. Mm-hmm. And so my understanding is that they're only in there for like a couple hours.
Right.
And she's on the good part of her high, and he said there'll be more if you do blah blah or, and they've had a long ongoing relationship thing, so I think she sort of trusts that there'll be more.
Right.
But she's getting what she wants, which is the meth.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair enough. It's the meth, and he's got the Heisenberg meth. You know, that's really gonna.
She's gonna be busy for a while.
She's gonna be busy for a while. I can really keep you up. And then we're rolling up here, but. Okay, two more like major bits here. One is when Walter talks to a psychiatrist and he gives that whole reason. You know, it's like, what do you? You know, it's like I'm gonna die. I'm overqualified. I don't get paid. And my son is sick. My wife is pregnant. You know, you're asking me why I ran, right? And that's a very plausible bullshit story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that would be a reason for you to cook meth and start dealing with
exactly.
Yeah, so all kinds of crazy shit can come out of that point of view. But then we bring Hector. So Hector is the major vulnerability here that Pinkman has to his story, because Hector is the witness, right? And, you know, and they roll him in, and he's like, you know, he verifies with his little bell communication that he speaks English, he knows what day it is, he knows what planet he's on, but he does not finger Jesse, right? And Gomi says to Hank, it's like, well, you know, no matter what, even if it's in their own best interest, these old school... you know, cartel gangbangers, they don't cooperate with the feds. They, period, do not cooperate with the feds. And so even if he could identify Jesse, he wouldn't. And then he poops.
Oh, does he?
And this is where we got...
In an enclosed little room, he does it so intentionally.
Yeah, this was
and he just looks at you and lifts, just like the damn cat.
This was our moment with the cat. Like,
that is our cat.
That is our cat. You know, you ask him if he's enjoying his ground-up chicken hearts, and he'll just squeeze one right out there on the bed or on your desk. You know, in whatever you, if you've got something nice you have to take outside the house and show somebody else, that'll get pooped on. You know, he'll read freaking minds.
We want people to continue to listen to this cast, honey.
We'll probably back it off on that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put a tampon in his ass.
Anyway, so Hector makes it unpleasant for them.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't like being in that little room, being, you know.
No.
He doesn't want to be treated like a puppet. No. But also what it does is unless Jesse knows that there's a ticking time bomb.
Jesse know, well, certainly that Hector knows, you know, and Hector could call.
Now you know, I know everything that you guys talked about, and I'm your ticking time bomb.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to be seeing some...
I have something over you.
I have something over you.
And you're going to, yeah.
Yeah.
Keeps their connection going.
Right. And then, so the last little bit, you know, is Walter is coming out of the hospital, and Hank shows him that he got, like, I wonder if they really do this. They gave him Tuco's grill.
Yeah,
like a day later. This because you know Hank is in the, you know.
Did they pop it out of his mouth when they were cleaning up the
this
body?
This can't be more than 2 or 3.
And then
days
they ran off to
after the shooting.
Tap plastics and got it
Lucite.
Dipped into Lucite.
This is an
acrylic
evidence.
An acrylic cube.
Here you can have this. We don't need anything from this. We can just take parts off of dead guys and give them to you.
Right.
Well before the case is closed. I mean, we're still doing the preliminary paperwork on this stuff. But I guess he, you know, it's poetic license, I suppose. And Walter's looking at those teeth, and he's like, those teeth were snarling at me a little while ago.
Right.
Know?
So, in conclusion, if anyone can tell us what they think stung by a dead bee means to them after watching
bit by
this,
a dead bee, yeah.
We would love to hear from you.
We'd love to hear from you. I've got the Walter Brennan thing. I'll be playing that, so you can mm-hmm. give some reference to it. But that's, yeah, the title reference, it seems like there are a few things. That can mm-hmm. So I think that's about all I have. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm cool.
Do you want to cover it? Okay, well, that's our Breaking Bad back cast. We're going to try and cover another one of these next week for the next few episodes. And if you've come to this point, absolutely, this is where the show really starts to take off.
Yeah, and because our cast has been taking off, we have dedicated, although obviously we're doing it on Saturday tonight, we have dedicated Thursday nights that
yes.
we will be casting.
We will be casting.
And to all of our friends and fans out there, we are going to be wanting to include your voice more and more into the cast
mm-hmm.
because we realize the thing that we're really enjoying about this casting is the group discussion.
Yes.
And that's something that we learned from hanging out with the Watchers.
Absolutely.
Because they do it so sublimely and it's just so fun to be in their living room with them.
Yes.
But we are going to be bringing on other filmmaker friends of ours and local celebrities that are crazy and good at narrative and things. And that should be very interesting. That should be happening really soon.
That should happen really soon.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going to give out my cell phone in general, but if you email me and you want to leave a voicemail, I will send you my cell phone number for that. Or if you have an iPhone that has a nice little app where you can record a message and email it to somebody.
Oh,
so if you want
that.
To record
That's
a
nice.
Message and email it to nattercast@gmail, we will definitely play your voicemails. And please absolutely send us any emails if you want. We'll read them on the air for you. And, until next time, I guess all these moments will be lost in time like tears in rain.
Oh, Jesus. Bitch.
Bitch. Gotta die now, bitch.
Rambling, but it's easier than just to wait now.